My name is Patrick Webb. Good morning, all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of you. I'm going to talk this morning a bit about the installation of a Lustre file system that was done in 2012 at the LANL site where Cray has an installation. And this is going to be a bit of a narrative. I'll cover about what some of the particulars of the setup and what kind of throughput and deep specifics of the file system, and then talk about a bit of the narrative of the challenges that we ran into along the way. So let's dive right in. First, an overview of what I installed. The LANL, our customer site, came and asked us to install a file system, and we came up with the following configuration. One thing that I'm not showing here is our test and development systems, which I'll describe in a second here. But our final large-scale file system was 96 OSS nodes. Those are object storage servers, and I'll explain here how Lustre works. Six metadata server nodes and one management node called an ESMS. All Dell R710 rack-mounted servers. Comes in a bunch of big cabinets, all prepackaged by Cray. A series of 48 disk racks with trays of 2 terabyte disks and an LSI controller managing the whole thing. We used InfiniBand to connect from the Lustre servers to the CLO mainframe, and then from the Lustre servers to the disk racks fiber channel to manage the traffic from the Cray supercomputer to the Lustre servers. We used a series of LNET routers. LNET stands for Lustre Network, and it's a protocol that we set up to run across InfiniBand in order to manage that traffic and translate between the Cray Gemini network to the Lustre LNET network. The servers themselves set up with a straightforward CentOS 5 image with Lustre 186 running on of that. Many of the clients runs also Lustre 186 client software, with a number of them running Lustre 184. So we had a bit of a hybrid or non-homogeneous mix of clients, but all the servers are running Lustre 186. And our management server runs Cray SLES 11 operating system that we have, and a Bright Cluster Manager. So if anybody's used Bright, you might know a bit about it. Bright Cluster Manager is kind of a cohesive way of provisioning all of the OSS server nodes. It keeps resident in its directory structure all of the boot images, their configuration, what the node is supposed to be provisioned with in terms of network settings and everything else. So when the node powers on, it goes out and requests a Pixie boot from the management server and gets provisioned with its image, and away it goes. So if anything bad happens to the node, you just power cycle it and it gets a totally fresh image. Very slick way of managing things. We laid out the file system into two petabyte file systems and 1 4-petabyte file systems. Each one of those object storage servers mounts in a staggered pattern the disks in 1, 3, 5, and then 6, 8, 10 in order to keep the traffic from the fiber channel to the disks from running into each other. The disks themselves are organized into a bunch of 8 plus 2 rated LUNs. LUNs are logical unit names, basically a collection of disks, physical objects that become a logical storage unit. In Lustre parlance, a LUN is actually called an OST, an object storage target, and that is where the data is stored. It's where the object server stores the object, your file, on that disk. So when I say, from now on, when I say OSTs, I really mean these LUNs, which are the logical storage objects. And we had 12 of these per rack, about 576 total, 144 OSTs each in the 2-petabyte file systems and 288 in the 4-petabyte file systems. Each OSS mounts 6 primarily, but it also has the capacity to mount another 6 in a failover configuration, which I'll describe here in a second. And then finally, the LNET network, the actual network layout for our file system, is a very simple flat layout. All of the LNET routers are set up to be capable of communicating with all of the object storage servers. And the reason for this is both for simplicity's sake and somewhat also for bandwidth's sake. So here's a quick little diagram of how things are laid out. We've got our Cielo compute nodes and the Cielo mainframe over on the left side, and they connect through the through these LNET routers, which are Cray nodes that have been specially purposed. They get their own boot image with the necessary software stack on it in order to run the LNET protocol. From the LNET routers, we connect with InfiniBand to the MDS and OSS servers. The InfiniBand connects actually to all of them. The metadata server is not a gateway to the OSS nodes, but is usually communicated with first. A user would come in and request a file from the Lustre file system. That request would go through the LNET routers, which would then query or send the request on to the metadata server, which would find out where that file is resident on the storage servers, and then pass off that transaction to the object storage servers, which would then directly communicate with the LNET routers, and the LNET routers would communicate with the necessary object storage servers and transfer the file back and forth, reading and writing as necessary. And then we have the fiber channel down to the actual disk arrays for the metadata target where it stores all the metadata and the storage targets where the actual data is stored. Sitting above this all is the management server, and we just had a Ethernet connection to administer everything on their own little private network. A quick diagram to show kind of how we set up the primary-secondary relationship for failover. So the way that Cray does its failover for the Lustre file system is it pairs off each set of object storage servers and will also pair the metadata server into failover buddies, really. Use the buddy system. This is a simplified version. Each OSS actually in real life mounts 6 OSTs and has another 6 connected to it that it can mount if its failover buddy dies. So in the event of a failure, let's say the OSS on the left suddenly catches on fire for no reason. The failover buddy OSS will then detect that failure, will be told that its buddy has been failed by the management server, the SMS, which monitors the health of the entire file system, gets a signal that it needs to failover. It will then grab... First of all, the management server will stoneth make sure that the failing node is dead. So it will send a power off command to it or otherwise verify that it can no longer communicate that node's no longer on the network. The failover OSS node will then mount the failed OSS node's OSTs and then mount and serve 12 OSTs instead of 6. This is a degraded state where the additional traffic going to a single OSS node can reduce performance, but it does mean that there's still performance and you can still access your file system. Degraded state is such that the admins will want to address this as soon as possible. A second failure that targets a already failed over node would mean that those OSTs are no longer accessible. Performance and capabilities. So once we got everything all set up, we were looking for an average InfiniBand link capable of about 2 to 3 gigabytes per second. We have initially tested them at raw throughput, 2.7 gigabytes per second. When we pulled together 52 LNET routers and 48 OSS nodes, 48 being the size of our largest file system, the raw bandwidth straight to the disks was about 70 gigabytes per second. 2,000 node job reading and writing to the file system clocked in at 77.4 gigabytes per second, and our contractual requirement was to hit 65.5 gigabytes per second. So we managed to exceed our stated goals for throughput for our file system. Metadata operations as well were something that were key, especially in a Lustre file system, since the metadata server is the only node handling metadata operations. I wanted to make sure that it could handle the load. The goal loads for that were 10,000 operations per second required, both creating and deleting, and we were able to measure 23,000 creates and 15,000 deletes per second, again, exceeding our requirements. So that's the file system that we installed. So how did we go about installing it? Our initial setup, Our initial setup actually took place at the Cray factory. And we began even before that with our test and development systems. In the paper that I wrote there, I described them a little bit. We have a little smaller system where we built a miniaturized version of what would eventually go on Cielo. And it consisted only of four OSS nodes and an MDS node. But we tried to make it, configuration-wise, mirror the big system as much as possible. I personally went to the Cray factory to oversee and be taught how the Lustre file system would go. Part of the challenges that were faced in this installation were the fact that the sysadmins, namely me, didn't actually know much about Lustre when we started. It was a goal for me to learn as much about Lustre as possible, learn how to install it, and then actually go and do so. So I went to Chippewa Falls, Minnesota, sit down with the Cray techs in the factory, build the test and development system there in the factory, which we then shipped off to LANL, and then sit with and see the initial build of the actual big file system. So all of the racks were pre-built and tested in the Cray factory to make sure all that the hardware components work. The OSS and MDS racks were packaged up. All of the cabling was put together and mapped out, all the InfiniBand and fiber channeling. And then it was all taken apart and shipped off to LANL. When it arrived at LANL, there was no software configuration that was retained from the factory. They were stripped down to bare metal, and we would reinstall everything from scratch there on site. The reason for this is the security stance at the LANL site. That's just how we do things. We reinstall everything so that we know exactly what we're installing. The process for this was actually made fairly simple with the management service. Once on site, really all I had to do was build the ESMS, get it built up, operating system installed, and then packaged up with the images that the OSS and MDS nodes would boot, the CentOS 5 with the Lustre 186 servers. We cabled in, wired up all of the OSS and MDS nodes, and powered them on, and the management server recognized just about all of them and started provisioning them, exactly as it should have. It was a very good feeling to see that happened. The final configuration was meant to have a high availability set up for the ESMS node, the management server. And this is where things begin to differ from the test and development. So the test and development server only had a single management server. It was not running in high availability setup. And the requirements of the job were okay with that. But the big file system definitely wanted to have high availability, an extra management server ready to take over in case the primary guy failed. So this will become a big challenge later on. But overall, things are really going smoothly up to this point. So this is where things really begin to differ. When we came in to install this file system, the site had a high degree of sensitivity towards the reliability and stability of the system, and they wanted a known quantity in what they're going to be dealing with. So there's another site with a Cray installation that has a Cray-built Lustre file system called NERSC, National Energy Research Science Center, I think. However, there are some key differences, despite the desire on our customer site to have a direct clone. First of all, our site had a more integrated management setup than NurseQuiz, in fact that we had an ESMS, which is a Cray product that has been productized and built by our developers to have a specific software stack and do things in a specific way. Our network fabric is different, more advanced. We had a series of InfiniBand director blades. I forget the manufacturer's name. A series of director blades, which have a much higher capacity in switching InfiniBand traffic around, and much more resilient. So our network fabric was just better. Our scale and usage patterns were different because they are, because we're not NERSC, we are LANL, and so what we do is different. The size of the compute system Cielo is bigger and different, and we are also able to apply lessons that we learned from other installs, from NERSC and from other installations that Cray did. The Cray knowledge base that we had grown since we had installed our last Lustre file system, so we'd be able to apply that. A bit of a moment of humility, too, here, in some of the site challenges is that our on-site staff, Cray, namely myself, were not so experienced with installing Lustre file systems. As a matter of fact, this was the first Lustre file system that I ever installed. So decisions made along the way were often made for simplicity's sake. So our setup, of course, had the usual parade of minor faults. Misconfigured servers, dead on arrival hardware. After a trip across the country in a truck, things shake up a little bit, and some things die. The occasional bad cable, things like that. The lack of knowledge affected the installation. My own inexperience with installing a file system was evident. The other thing was that we only had a single ESMS set up at first. There was pressure to install things and get them set up and tested quickly. The LANL site really wanted to get their hands on the file system. And so when we were standing things up, we had a well-functioning test and development system. And so the desire was to make an exact clone of that on the larger scale. Said, we've got this working great. Let's do the exact same thing on the larger scale and get things tweaked up later. So when we started out, we only put up the single management server, got it configured and working correctly, and said, great, that looks good. Let's proceed forward. We also made the network scheme for the LNET routers very simple. We pooled them all together into one big chunk. So LNET as a protocol has capacity to divide up its routers into different little subnetworks that can communicate with specific OSS nodes, different things. So we could have carved them up into saying, these LNET routers are going to talk with our 2 petabyte file systems. This chunk of LNET routers will talk with the 4 petabyte file systems. So if a compute node or user wants to access their file on the big file system, it'll go through these LNET nodes. Or if it's going to elsewhere, it's going to go through those LNET nodes over there. And that way, if something happened to these routers, it doesn't affect things over here. However, this requires quite a bit of additional configuration effort on the part of the sysadmins, whereas pooling all of the LNET routers into one big network was a relatively simple network setup. And this meant that traffic for the 2 petabyte file system could go through an LNET router that will, in the next transaction it covers, send information over to the 4 petabyte file system. The drawback of this is, of course, that if anything happened to the LNET routers on a large scale, you could end up with heavily degraded or performance or just not being able to get to your file systems at all. Or if one of the file systems is incredibly busy, that the other two file systems wouldn't be able to have as much share of the resources because all of the LNET routers would be accessing, doing jobs for just one of the file systems. However, this turned out not to be the case because we had enough LNET routers to cover the traffic, and also that if there was so much traffic to one file system that it was overwhelming the LNET routers, it would also be eating up all of the InfiniBand bandwidth. So the bottleneck was not, in fact, in the LNET routers, but would have, in fact, been in the network pipe. Talked a little bit more about LNET routers than I thought. Then finally, the setup challenge was that not all of our software for the failover logic was quite ready to go. Many of these faults we solved with elbow grease, of course. Dead on arrival hardware was identified, replaced. We used an XDD utility to check out our links, find slow disks, replace them, find slow cables, and replace them. Misconfigured servers were identified. As an interesting note, it was later identified that we had a misconfiguration with respect to multi-threading, which took some tricks to redo. We, as Cray, did not realize that the setting in the BIOS on the Dell R710s for disabling multi-threading was the setting that we thought it was. Oops. Design decisions were discussed with the customer. Like I said, the decision to go with the single SMS that would be made high availability later was made. Justification for the pooled LNET router scheme was communicated. Why we wanted to do that, what our justification was, and really just making our case, making my case for why we should go with the pooled LNET routers. So our performance testing passed with flying colors. Once we got the whole file system set up, got all of the configuration for the LNET routers set and stabilized, we tested out and we got our bandwidth numbers that I talked about before, and it looked great. So we moved on to our functionality and reliability testing, and that didn't work so great. We had misunderstandings between the contract and the release software, the incomplete functionality of our failover scripts. This was one of our first releases for our productized, externally attached Lustre file systems that Cray was putting out. And so our failover scripts were written primarily so far by the developers and had not seen a lot of in-field testing and experience. And then finally, some of the failover requirements were simply not feasible in reality. What now the site thought that they wanted for failover wasn't necessarily how the hardware acted, specifically with respect to the LSI controllers. So some of the examples of the things that were going on. In each of the disk racks that was managed by an LSI controller, one of the deliverables was be able to have a power failure of one of the power supplies in the LSI controller, have one of those power supplies go dark, and the system still keep on going, that the other power supply would be sufficient to keep it going. In each disk rack, there were two LSI controllers that were redundant, and each LSI controller had a power supply to it. So the notion of the failover test was that if one of those LSI controllers were to go out to lunch, that the disk rack would be able to continue functioning on just the one LSI controller. Now, the LSI controller box that sits in the rack actually is one unit that has a redundant power supply in it. So the two power supplies and the two LSI controllers were not physically separate, and if one of the power supplies died or somebody were to pull a plug out of it or the dude sweeping along tripped over the wire, the LSI controller box would not lose power because of that redundant power supply. Even if one died, it would still keep powering it. So there wasn't actually a way to fail just one LSI controller, because if we cut the power to one LSI controller, we would have also have cut the power to both LSI controllers. And if you do that, then you lose the entire rack of disks, it goes offline, and you don't really have a functioning file system at that point. And the file system goes, hey, I don't have a bunch of disks, I'm not going to do anything. So we didn't really have a failover test that could be done there. The fiber channel network was never meant to be monitored by the ESMS. So if we had a failed fiber channel path, we wouldn't be able to detect that directly. We were able to detect it by looking at the logs, and we'll be able to see a number of errors pop up. But that was more of in the domain of our on-site hardware folks, which monitor the hardware and keep track of those. Luckily, FiberChanner is an incredibly resilient setup, and so it continues to truck along to this day. Another interesting failover deliverable that wasn't really well communicated was that an orderly shutdown of an OSS or an MDS node was meant to initiate a failover. This miscommunication occurred between the developers who wrote the failover scripts, never really saw the requirements, and the customer who wrote that, okay, if we shut down one of our OSS nodes, we want it to fail over. And so it was up to me to communicate between these two different things, saying, well, we really need to have it so that if we do an orderly shutdown, one of the things that was said to me is like, well, if you're doing an orderly shutdown, why aren't you manually failing things over in the first place? Which is a totally reasonable thing to say. If you know that you're going to power something off, you should reasonably move its work over to its failover OSS node. Make sure that everything is off of that OSS node that you're going to shut down, and then shut it down. That is kind of the description of an orderly failover. However, the customer wanted things to be a little bit more well protected than that. And so we wanted it to have that the OSS and MDS node, if they're orderly shut down, that we would kick them over. The ESMS not being in high availability configuration was a really big thing. I'll talk about that in its own slide. And the LNF health checks did not work at scale. And that was a very interesting problem with timing and overload of the LNET network. So the ESMS from single to double was one of the big two problems that we ran into. The desire to stand it up really quick, get their hands on it, get a functioning file system as soon as possible, meant the customer is going forward without the creation and testing of the high availability setup of the ESMS until the end. However, the CRE procedures for setting up high availability were only written and documented for the initial setup. We had procedures for setting up a single ESMS, and we had procedures for setting up an ESMS in high availability, but we did not have procedures and documentation for taking a setup single ESMS and adding a high availability scheme. That just simply did not exist on a live system. Ultimately, the solution was to write those procedures and techniques in the field. We needed to repartition the hard drive of the ESMS without losing data, which is a delicate process, set up the network connections and heartbeat detectors between the primary and secondary ESMS and test them without interrupting service, because we already had a file system that was up and running, not yet in use, but we certainly didn't want to bring things down and interrupt our testers who were still kind of figuring out how everything worked. This process delayed acceptance, but not beyond our deadline. Delayed acceptance, and we had to spend a significant amount of time at the end of the installation. When everything else was complete to get the high availability set up and finish that last piece of the puzzle to get a fully functional and delivered file system. The LNET network encountered problems with its health checks because we didn't really understand how the Lustre network really used its resources. And we didn't really see these things manifest until we got up to scales. First, what did we see? The health checks for the LNET network was to make sure that we were able to ping across the LNET network and that our routers and OSS nodes were able to communicate with each other. So in our health check scripts, what it would do is it would periodically launch an LNET ping from one OSS node to another pair of random nodes on its file system and check and make sure that it can communicate with that. If it wasn't able to, then that meant that there was a link down somewhere and that we had to get somebody in to check it out. So each LNET ping would take a certain amount of time, so the health check was written in so that it would wait for all of those to finish, and it would do it sequentially, and it would wait for all of them to finish before moving on to the next test. What we found out at scale was that when you launch a test on 96 OSS nodes, the test would relaunch before finishing its previous iteration. So it would launch a test, it would get through about half of the OSS nodes, and all of these nodes succeeding, excuse me, but before it got to the end of the list of nodes, it would launch its another test, clearing out its detection logic before the pass had completed. This would mean that at the end of the test, they would passively fail. But a passive fail wasn't an actual failure. It just didn't care that it hadn't heard from them. It was looking for a positive failure, an LNET node or an OSS node saying that I couldn't communicate with someone, help. But if it never heard from them, it wouldn't care. So half of the nodes never got a chance to say whether or not they were healthy. This meant that we had a really hard time getting a failover to trigger on an injected test on some OSS nodes. So we'd fail an OSS node, tell them, you're dead now, your LNET link is toast. And it wouldn't fail over. The system wouldn't detect a failure because it never got to that node to actually ask them, hey, did you fail? Wouldn't know. So we rewrote the test in order to add some delays. It took about 60 seconds for it to launch a test, when it really took about 90 seconds to run all the tests, so we cranked up the time that it would allow to about 2 minutes, so we'd actually get through them. After that, we started to see false positives. So it turns out that there's no retry functionality in the health check. A single failed ping could be a false positive. We learned that Lustre, and LNET in particular, keeps one credit aside, transaction credit aside, for pings. So LNET works by having a big pool of credits, and as people come in and request transactions, it has this bunch of credits and say, okay, you have a credit to do a transaction. And when it runs out, it says, I'm not servicing any more transactions right now until I get some free credits. If that ping credit doesn't get through the queue quick enough, then it'll fail the ping. And the ping credit has a very low priority because it's only a ping. Really, the OSS server wants to service all of its file transactions first, and it doesn't really care about the ping. You can always try them again, unless your health check logic doesn't try it again. So we added in retry logic to the LNET health check. Finally, we were running into problems with that we weren't detecting our failures. We were finally detecting our fails. This was a positive thing. We were actually hitting them. But we weren't checking them fast enough, so we wanted to get through the test much, much quicker. So we added in a series of exponential backoffs from the health checks. So if the health check returned really, really quickly, if the LNET ping returned really quickly, say on a healthy system, you go, ping, okay, you're healthy, good, then it would get through the test right quick in 5 seconds. It wouldn't wait around the whole 90 seconds to see if a slow or delayed ping was going to come through. It would only wait the full 90 seconds. The health check would only wait the full 90 seconds if it wasn't hearing from one of the OSS nodes that it was thinking that it was detecting a failed path, at which point it would then send out and say that I've got an unhealthy node and initiate the actual failover mechanisms. So it took us three tries in order to actually rewrite in the field how this health check would work. Finally, we also had to add in retries for TCP ping checks to make sure that the OSS nodes themselves were responding to the administrative network and also for their power checks. A busy OSS node would not always respond over the Dell DRAC, IPMI network. If they were busy, they wouldn't always respond right away. If you only do the one check, the management server might think, holy crap, I've got this node that's powered off. I better fail them over. When in fact the node was perfectly healthy, it was just busy and not responding right away. Again, we added in exponential backoffs and retries so that it wouldn't immediately assume that as a failed node, it would try again 3 or 4 times just to make sure. So some of our lesson learns is that really knowing the underlying structure helped a lot. We solved a lot by knowing how our stuff worked, how our health checks worked, learning how the LNET peer credits worked, educating myself on all of these aspects really helped us write things in the field, get things set up quickly. Testing all of our requirements would have made things a lot easier if we had gotten the developers to look at the requirements and say, "Yep, oh yes, we're definitely doing that," or "Oh no, this isn't really a feasible health check, we should rethink it," would have reduced some of the confusion. And then finally, don't bypass something just because it's expedient. If we had taken the time earlier in the installation process to set up the SMS with high availability, even though that would have delayed the testers and LANL folks from getting onto the file system and getting busy with figuring out how much data they could push through it, even though it would have delayed that, it would have meant that we would have spent less time at the end worrying over getting high availability set up. But finally, don't be afraid to talk things out with the customer. Everything that we did was not a big deal because we were upfront and forthright with the problems that we had. When we had failing health checks, we told LANL site, "Listen, our health checks aren't working right. We're going to rewrite them. Here's what our problems we're having. Here's how we're going to solve them." We never hid anything. We never tried to cover our butts. We owned our faults. And as a consequence, we were able to own our successes. In the end, everything was installed and accepted on time and on budget. And it's a successful and functioning file system today. So thank you very much. And I've talked for over 30 minutes, so questions, please.
Thank you. That was interesting. I guess there's some context I'm missing. This file system was specifically built for this customer, or this was a generic file system and this happened to be the first customer?
The software stack is a product. Yeah, kind of a genericized system. But the customer got to define how big of a file system that they wanted. So they got to say, "We want this capacity, and we want it set up into these three different file systems." But the Lustre software stack is a product. The management and health monitoring stack is a product.
So I guess what confused me was the comment that the developers never looked at the requirements.
And this was our first deployment of this product.
And so the requirements were the customer's requirements, not the product manager's requirements.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess the follow-up question is, how do you fix that?
more communication is the fix for that. And since then, Cray has also improved our documentation. I was able to provide a lot of text back to developers and the documenters saying, here's what worked, here's what you need to add to your documentation and procedures and processes, so that if the big one really was the adding the high availability to the SMS, a single SMS. That's going to happen again sometime in the future. I don't know when or where, but somebody's going to have a single SMS that they want to make high availability. When we installed this, that procedure didn't exist, and now it does because of what we did.
So this is a war story, and it may actually have been from Cray. I'm not sure, but I was told never buy anything with the serial number 1.
Nonsense. Be bold. No. The product that Cray was selling is a Lustre file system. So from my perspective, I was never in the thought process of considering another file system.
So, and I assume this is intended to hook into the XC30, is that what you
mean? XC6. Sorry, I didn't describe what Cielo is. Cielo is a Cray XC6 system. Yes. As a matter of fact, yes. So part of the productization of the file system that Cray was trying to put together was something that could come in somewhat as an appliance. You have all of the disk racks, you have all of the storage servers, and you have the management set up. And then from there, whatever compute systems you have at your center, you can then go and mount your file system from it. So you can scale the size of the file system, whatever size you want, and then it's fairly agnostic as to what's actually plugging into it. You can have several compute clusters plug into the file system, or you can have only one file system plug in. In our case, it was a dedicated, it's a dedicated file system. But it is, yeah, definitely possible, and the goal of Cray's product is to be something that can be, have many, many clients plugging into it. All the clients do need to be Lustre, yes.
And the same version, 1.8.6, or do you support 2.2?
I can't talk too much about what's in the future for Cray, but I do know Lustre 1.8.6, and in this specific case of using Lustre 1.8.6, Lustre 1.8.6 servers will also communicate with Lustre 1.8.4 clients or Lustre 1.8.6 clients. So you can kind of have a heterogeneous Lustre version ecosystem.
As a general rule, higher rev servers will talk to lower rev clients.
Yeah. That being said, if you can keep all of your Lustre clients and servers on the same version, that is better. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's just if you're going to try to make this an external product, it would seem that you're going to need to be able to handle different architectures or different engines.
Yeah. No, that's a totally reasonable statement. But, yeah, I don't know what we would do with picking different architectures for how we're installing things.
Mm-hmm. We trust it, so we are really reluctant to change to another one. So how do I sort of convince them to go for this file system instead?
A lot of the I can talk a bit about, like, you know, why you would use a Lustre file system. It's open source and all that jazz. But it's really just the capabilities of what Lustre does, and what Lustre does is large files quickly. Lustre's not very good at small files done in great quantity, because that's a lot of metadata operations, and you only have one metadata server. However, you have a lot of object storage servers, so if you have a very big file or a relatively small number of very big files, say, I've got 21 terabyte files out there, and I want to, you know, slurp them all into my big simulation. Lustre's very good at that. Once the metadata server hands off that transaction to the object storage servers, you have a lot of different servers that are sending all that bandwidth. So it's very good at sending large files quickly, large data quickly. That's what Lustre does. From the management and appliance side of things, Cray is working hard to have a sane, stable, well-managed appliance-like file system that we can sell to our customers.
So if you have a mix of all large files, but one of them has to be random access, and you would only read small parts of that file from all the nodes at the same time, and they, all the nodes would require different parts, small chunks,
yeah,
of that file. How would Lustre handle that?
It's getting outside of my understanding of Lustre.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I could make some speculations, but I can talk to you afterwards about speculating about how I think,
yep,
Lustre might work.
Yep, fair enough.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.